morning and welcome. I suggest that we start with our meeting. And that obviously we may have to introduce a few faces among ourselves. Later when the minister and hopefully with the deputy join us, she will join us shortly, we will introduce her and the deputies. But for now, let's indicate to the honourable members that we have the officials from the Department of International Relations and Cooperation who are going to make presentations. I want to request them to take turns to introduce themselves, including the officials who are in the office of the minister, because of their in-course newness to this committee. They also need to indicate who they are and what they are responsible for. And before that, we are blessed to, perhaps privileged, to have in our midst the Honourable Parliamentary Councillor to the President, Ibrahim Ibrahim. He's a veteran MP. Comrade TB, most welcome. We also have Honourable Manoku Masihela, who's here with us. She indicated that she will leave shortly. She's standing in for Honourable Didi Raputi. Now, the official.
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Ganga Tsengiwe, responsible for West Africa and North and Central Africa in DIRCO.
Good morning. My name is Tulufelo Teule. I'm responsible for the Horn of Africa and Indian Ocean Islands.
Good morning. My name is Cassandra Ngweri Mukoni. I'm responsible for Southern Africa.
Good morning, Chairperson and honourable members. My name is Swazita Ital. I'm the parliamentary liaison in the office of the minister.
Good morning, honourable chairperson and honourable members. My name is Sharon Horton Hesselman. I'm in the office of the minister. I do research analysis and support for the minister. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Now,
what I will do, honourable members, once the minister is here, I'll introduce the members to the minister. Yes. Okay. So, welcome to your meeting. Now, members would remember that pursuant to the State of the Nation address by the President, it is the practice of this committee to take discussions around issues that would have been raised by the State of the Nation address. And for today, we have the DRC, we have Morocco, we have South Sudan. In future, we'll have Western Sahara, we'll have Cuba, we'll have Somalia, we'll have Turkey, or the USA, or any other matter that the committee may deem fit to come before it. Presentations on AGOA, presentations on BRICS, etc., etc. These are the things that normally the committee would like to be briefed on. But let's just go to a few housekeeping matters. Are there any apologies that must be recorded on both sides, from the ministry and from members of parliament? So, sir.
Thank you, Chair. I have three apologies. One from Honorable Raputi, second one from Honorable Kalyan, and the third one from Honorable Dandy. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much.
The apologies are noted. Now, under adoption of the agenda, let's just rephrase closing into announcements. Number five. Let's make closing an announcement, then we'll deal with one or two announcements then. In fact, it will be questions for oral reply to the security cluster ministers, as well as the meeting of the chairpersons, the COC meeting. And I'm not sure about the time. It could be 12 or half past 12. The meeting with Frolic, so we should be done by it. Yeah. Well, PGIR. Okay. What time? Okay, I want to hand over to the department to present in the order in which I would not be violently opposed to the order being violated, but any of the items indicated here, the presentation on the situation in the DRC, in Morocco, and South Sudan. Department? Yes. Sorry for the delay. It is called administrative gossip. It happens all the time. Over to you.
Thank you, Chair. I've already introduced myself as Cassandra Benemukoni, Chief Director of Southern Africa. Following is what the department has prepared a presentation to the Honourable on the DRC. We'll start with the current situation, and that is the instability in the DRC and the Great Lakes, GLR, which we know that it has persisted for more than two decades, and that the instability emanates from multiple fronts. We list them as events in other national states impacting on the region and the DRC. We have seen a number of refugees that have left the DRC and have moved into the region, into Uganda, even as far as Zambia. And certainly some of those states that have received them do not have the capacity to do so. There's also non-state armed groups and negative forces that are operating in the DRC, and in the main in the eastern and the Kasai region. The attacks on MONUSCO and the DRC National Army by all those who are there for their own vested interests. There's intercommunal violence in the situation, as I mentioned earlier, in the Kasai region. There's political unrest due to the political situation, general elections, which were postponed to December 2018, when they should have been held in 2016. The international community is committed to promoting peace and security in the DRC and GLR. The United Nations Organization Stabilization Mission in the DRC, MONUSCO, has been operating in the DRC since 2010, taking over from the UN mission to the country. The UN Security Council has, in Resolution 2389 of 2017, reaffirmed that the Peace, Security and Cooperation Framework, the PSC, remains the central mechanism to achieve durable peace and stability. And what we are saying is, without peace and security in the DRC, there cannot be any development of note. The Force Intervention Brigade, the FIB of MONUSCO, plays a pivotal role in peace building efforts. the Peace Security Cooperation Framework and the DRC, as well as the, in the region, was signed on 24 February in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia, and it forms the basis for the engagements in the DRC by the AU and countries in the region. Because without the engagement of the region and the AU, many things cannot happen towards the resolution of the conflict. The PSC framework agreement was signed by Angola, Burundi, Central Africa, Congo, the DRC, Rwanda, South Africa, South Sudan, Uganda, Tanzania, and Zambia. Regionally, the International Conference on the Great Lakes region, the ICGLR, the Southern African Development Committee, which is SADC, and the African Union Peace and Security Council coordinate the approach of the African Union in promoting peace and security in the DRC and the GLR, noting that peace in the cannot just be in the DRC, the entire GLR region needs to be made to be peaceful and with security. The debate concerning the holding of elections and release of the electoral calendar continue to occupy the DRC's political scene and international interest. Many people who have interest who want to see the resolution of conflict in Congo are looking forward to the general elections and the subsequent release of the awaited date for the elections of 23 December 2018 has led to a renewed debate concerning the country's political direction and uncertainties in terms of adhering to political decisions or agreements meant to pave way for democratic election process to take place. Whether we like it or not, it is in our interest to see that indeed elections happen in the DRC. So we welcome the announcement of the elections date of the 23 December 2018, because with those elections, it is hoped that a number of things will be put into place to ensure that the DRC is peaceful and secure. The international community, including the United Kingdom, United States of America, Belgium, France and the European Union, as well as the United Nations, have condemned the ongoing violence and instability in the DRC. They also insisted that the 31 December 2016 political agreement and the electoral calendar for the 2018 needs to be adhered to. Because if that is not, we are not going to see any semblance of stability in the country. The 37th SADC Summit of Heads of State and Government, which was held in Pretoria in South Africa from 19 to 20 August 2017, also noted that a number of challenges have made it unrealistic for the DRC to hold elections by the end of 2017. The summit also called on the DRC to adhere to the 31st December 2016 political agreement and to hold general elections in 2018. Hence, our happiness to say that at last the elections will be held in 2018 when some of the challenges have hopefully been addressed. On the security situation in the DRC, of concern is a continued security instability, particularly in the eastern DRC, with armed groups and militia continuing to launch attacks against the DRC National Army, the positions of MONUSCO and civil populations. What we are generally told is that there is so much movement in that area that when the militia want to do what they want to do, which is unlawful, and the DRC army confronts them, then there is instant a vortex of fighting a violence. Coupled to this, a cholera epidemic has exacerbated the humanitarian situation in the eastern DRC. Earlier I alluded to the displacement and movement of people of Congo. Now what exacerbates the situation is the cholera epidemic. MONUSCO needs to be assessed on its ability to provide support to the DRC government in promoting peace and stability and ensuring successful elections. If necessary, MONUSCO's mandate needs to be adjusted in order for MONUSCO to play a more effective role in the political process in the DRC when it comes up to a renewal in 2018. So that assessment is awaited.
Welcome, Minister. Just for a moment, Minister.
Minister Sisulu, most welcome to the meeting. We were advised that you will come. You will come in just a few minutes after we would have started, and that at your earliest convenience, you would request to take leave for the cabinet meeting that is taking place now and today. And so, with that, most welcome. Honourable members, pursuant to the cabinet reshuffle that took place a few weeks ago, is it weeks or days? Yeah. There's been a change of leadership which also affected the Department of International Relations. So we have a new but veteran Minister of International Relations, Minister Sisulu, who is now the minister in this department, as well as a new deputy minister, and she's not here. Deputy Minister Regina Mhaule, and we also have the old minister who's been here with us, Deputy Minister Lenders. Those are the deputy ministers who are working with our minister. Minister, just let me just introduce a few of the members that you've seen, hopefully for the first time. The Honorable Bergman, or let them introduce themselves. Bergman.
Thanks, Chair. The minister knows me. Every time I get an opportunity to take a picture with her, I do. It's Darren Bergman from Gauteng, but just to welcome you and just to wish you everything of success and to hopefully be more diplomatic and less antagonistic than our previous minister. Thank you.
No. Thank you very much, Chair President. Welcome, Minister. It's Honorable Stevens Mukhalapa from Gauteng. We welcome you. We are definitely looking forward to working with you. You are starting on a good start because you are attending the portfolio committee in spite of the cabinet. So we sincerely appreciate your gesture, and we are looking forward, especially this year, of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. And we believe that if you put the human rights at the center of our foreign policy, we will be on a good trajectory moving forward. So welcome, Minister.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. And let me also take this opportunity to introduce myself. Yeah, I am Stan Maidler, a member of the study group of the ANC from Limpopo. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. Honorable Minister, I'm Tengizizwe Khateb from the Free State. I'm the whip of this portfolio committee on behalf of the ANC. We also like to welcome you into this committee. We know that the challenges we're facing are enormous. We know that the rate of unemployment is very high in the country. We need the foreign direct investment. We hope that your expertise in the previous portfolios you headed will also help the country in drawing the foreign direct investment so that we can fight the triple challenge of poverty, inequality, and unemployment. All of the best. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Khateb. Minister, my name is Sipho Sezwe. The surname is Masango. I'm from Mpumalanga. I'm in the chair of this portfolio committee. Comrade Ibi.
Thank you very much. My name is Ibrahim. I'm the parliamentary counselor to the president. I would like to congratulate you for being appointed as Minister of International Relations. And I know the minister, she has a long history of international solidarity, and I'm sure that she would do well in the new portfolio. Thank you very much.
Chairperson. Mono Minister Ndumamu Thandiwe Kenye, Honorable Thandiwe Kenye, ndivula e-Eastern Cape, ndakwamkela phasini lekomiti. Enkosi.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm Wana Makwetle Nelo Mashabela from Limpopo. Welcome, Your Minister.
Thank you very much. Can I then persuade members to allow me to invite the minister to present a few remarks, after which she will leave at her convenience. Then the presenter will then proceed with the presentation. I think in terms of management of time, that should be in order. Thank you very much. Thank you. Minister, over to you.
Chairperson, thank you very much, and good morning to all the members of the committee. Thank you for your welcoming remarks. I had to come in today to introduce myself because I don't know where I'll be tomorrow or the next day or the next day. Our program with the President has been a very hectic one. On the 21st of March, he will be chairing the SADC Heads of State Conference. Preparations have already been started, and so at the earliest opportunity he had, we went all over to Angola, Mozambique, Angola, Namibia, and Botswana. Those chosen for the reason that Angola is the chair of the organ, and we have a number of outstanding issues, and I can see that you are busy with them now, one of them being the DRC, the other one in SADC context being Lesotho, and he had to find out what the view of the region was before we have this meeting. We still have a number of other countries to go to. We're going to Swaziland, and Zimbabwe, and Southern Zimbabwe and Mozambique on Saturday and Sunday. And it will go on until we are ready. So if I didn't take this opportunity to come and say to greet you, I probably would have been caught up in a whirlwind of activity. March and April happened to be a very active month for the Department of International Relations, and the President being the chair of SADC for now, and I think he's handing over to Namibia, we have to be on top of the situation. I have had a discussion with the two deputy ministers, and we've found a way of sharing our responsibility. Regina Mhaule will probably be at your next portfolio committee to introduce herself. Right now, she's representing us in cabinet. Mr. Landers is preparing for the questions that you're going to ask this afternoon, because by then I will be gone to prepare. I can see the DA is smiling because they were hoping to get at me. I'm sure. No, we have to prepare for the meetings, and we also have on our hands some diplomatic issues we have to handle. The British Foreign Minister is wanting to come down to South Africa over your decision, all of you, except the DA, on the issue of land. So we have a very, very hectic program on our schedule. Thank you for allowing me to come and it is I who is now responsible, and I will make sure that we are represented here very regularly. You're a very important part of the work that you do, because if you understand what you do, then half the work is done. We depend on you to be part of our establishment, be there to indicate to us when you think that we're not going the right way, and we will be here to explain to you what we're doing. Because the rest of the African continent looks to South Africa for leadership. You know that it's just a historical matter. So we dare not falter at any given time. This being a transition from one president to another, we've had to make sure that we're on our toes explaining ourselves everywhere. But Regina Mhaule will be here. Deputy Minister Landers will be holding the fort in my place, both in the office and in Parliament. Chairperson, yesterday the President went to chose the Department of DECO to be the first that he visits. The excitement in DECO was overwhelming. I always imagined that DECO consisted of people who were very diplomatic and sublime. They were screaming like it was a rally. So I think that we are off to a good start, and we were very glad that he chose us to start off with, because he appreciates the work that is done by yourselves and DECO. He depends on the work that is done by DECO and yourselves for all of the work that he does as a president. So we had that meeting, and we are hoping that from his advice we'll be able to do everything in our power to be the support that he needs and to make you proud. Our determination is to make you, all of you, very proud. In most countries, the Committee on International Relations, the Committees on Defense, are normally a support structure. And I hope that we will not, I will not come here and see you as different parties, but as one group of people, South Africans, who want to make sure that the face of South Africa shines brightly, and that the leadership of South Africa remains the sterling leadership that we inherited from Madiba. We celebrate his 100th year this year, so Chogam will be honoring him, and I'm hoping that there is a way in which you will be part of that or send a message. My team here will give you the rundown of what we're going to be doing, and we want you to be part of what we're doing, and we want you to raise these matters in Parliament so we're all aware of the role of Africa in the continent and in the world as well. Chairperson, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Minister. Honorable EB.
Point, I was told by my DECO colleagues that they were screaming not only at the President because of the presence of DECO.
Honorable EB will also leave at his earliest convenience. He is going to attend the filming of a documentary at the Robben Island today. It starts today. Now, okay. Yeah, Minister, and you won't see him. Honorable EB, you will leave. Let's proceed apace with the presentation.
Thank you, Chair. I was on the last bullet on the regional oversight mechanism, the ROM, of the ICGLR, which has called for the first intervention brigade, the FIB of MONUSCO, to be strengthened, and a call which is supported by South Africa. Hence, earlier I alluded to the assessment that needs to be done so that indeed MONUSCO can be strengthened in that regard. Following our implications for South Africa on the DRC, and we are saying the DRC cannot be viewed in isolation from the surrounding Great Lakes region. For the fact that if you get the DRC right and the region north, that cannot be claimed as achievement. We need to have the DRC conflict resolved, as well as the Great Lakes region in its entirety. The international community needs to honor its obligations on the peace, security, and cooperation framework for the DRC. The agreement calls for the political reforms in the DRC while requesting neighboring countries to stop interfering in the affairs of the DRC. We all know that historically, countries like Rwanda and Uganda have seen themselves as having a hand in playing a role in the economy and the running. running of the DRC. Now we want that the DRC to be respected for its sovereignty. And the international community is to renew its commitment to helping the DRC. South Africa has been involved in peacebuilding efforts in the DRC since 1997. This includes, but not limited to, investing a considerable amount of financial, human, and technical resources. We have deployed troops in the DRC since 1994 under the auspices of the United Nations. South Africa's peacekeeping mission in the DRC is the longest running on any South African military deployment. The establishment of South Africa, Angola, and the DRC tripartite mechanism on dialogue and cooperation in 2023, and the main objective of that TM, the tripartite mechanism, is to assist the DRC to consolidate and achieve peace and stability. Hence, we have on the ground officials from the Department of International Relations and, of course, from the security cluster as well. The 37th SADC Summit of Heads of State and Government held in Pretoria in South Africa noted that a number of challenges that I've already said, that the DRC that was not able to have the elections in 2017 owing to the number of challenges that they were experiencing, and therefore that any date that could have been determined would have been unrealistic in that regard. SADC's engagement with the DRC is informed by the Peace, Security and Cooperation framework for the DRC and the Great Lakes region, as well as the various UN resolutions. This in turn informs South Africa's position and engagement with the DRC. SADC is developing a multi-vector approach in that we're looking at a number of things in terms of how we should engage the DRC. In this regard, SADC has appointed former President Pohamba of Namibia as a special envoy to the DRC. South Africa is also of the view that countries in the region, regional bodies such as the AU and the international community, should actively contribute measures to promote peace and security in not only the DRC but in the GLR, something that I alluded to earlier. South Africa is committed to supporting the DRC and to promoting a free and fair election in December. There are a number of factors that come into play here as to how best we are going to assist the DRC in terms of building the capacity of the election body, and then of course helping with the ballot boxes and so forth. But it's a detail that can be provided at some stage. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much. Can I invite comments so that we can have a pointed discussion and comments from the members, then we'll take on the Sudan. Honorable Khatebe.
Just note your names. Honorable Khatebe, Maila, Mokalapa, Bergman, Shabela, Honorable Kenya.
In that order, please. Honorable Khatebe.
Thank you, Chairperson. First of all, I'd like to appreciate the presentation made by the officials. But the starting point I'll come in with is that the destabilization of DRC is a historic issue. We know very well that with the murder of the first Prime Minister of DRC, Prime Minister Patrice Lumumba, it was in the behest and in the interest of the Western countries. I don't know whether the department has studied the influence of the Western countries in the current situation. Number two, Chairperson, I like and appreciate the role played by South Africa in helping the DRC coming up with a semblance of administration after the longest conflict which is there. But what I'm really interested in is that how did South Africa and the AU and the continent drop the ball, in particular when coming to the issue of the elections which should have been had in 2016. Because if the elections were not held, if the elections are not held at a prescribed time, that's when that the forces of instability are going to gain the upper hand. What is it which the department and the AU and the SADC doing to ensure that this timetable which has been rolled out now for the December 2018, there's no one who's going to deviate from it? What is it which SADC to ensure that that thing is not going to happen? Number three, on the issues of the countries which are around the DRC, Chairperson, there's a lot of human rights violation which has taken place. I'm also disturbed by the report that it does not indicate that the women are being raped and the children are being raped, the houses are being burned down in the various areas there. What is it which SADC is doing to ensure that it is stemmed, that thing is stemmed out? When the takers is going to be unleashed in the churches, is a cause for concern, Chairperson. It's a cause for concern, Willapot, because I think that the people have a right to express their demands peacefully, but we don't expect the army to come with their hard gloves on top of them. Né? But also the issue of the African Renaissance Fund, is it not the high time that South Africa calls on all the parties which are involved there into some sort of a conference and dialogue, so that they mapped out their own future for the DRC? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Khader. Honorable Mayela.
thank you very much, Chair. And maybe let me also appreciate the presentation. Mine is also in line with what was said by Honorable Khader, especially regarding the current instability in the country. That the challenges previously made it unrealistic for the DRC to hold elections. Now, is there any difference now? Are the current challenges in such a way that they will create a safe space for the holding of elections? Now, the other issue is the issue of the constitution. The current president, does the constitution allow him to stand for elections? If it doesn't, is the current president a factor in terms of whether the holding of elections will be possible? I think, Chair, those were my points. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Maina. Honorable Mukhalapa.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think it's very much prudent that we are discussing the DRC and the minister is here because of, I think, it's the hands ball that she's going to have to carry through and hit the ground running on it because of, I think, South Africa has invested quite a lot of resources and money in trying to resolve the conflict. I remember the Sun City conference where we had all the DRC opposition parties in Sun City at a cost of over 350 million. So we have a serious vested interest in it. But I think in the same vein, there is a perception, Minister, that we dropped the ball when it comes to conflict resolution and ensuring democracy in the DRC, because there was a perception that South Africa is conflicted. And I think it's one thing that we need to deal with, and that we have a bias towards favoring the outgoing President Kabila, and that has created tension because of we could not be trusted by all of opposition, however fragmented they are, but the perception that was that we are biased towards President Kabila, and perhaps it's one thing that we need to demystify and ensure that we build credibility. And the issue of the perception of conflict of interest in terms of the business that are conducted in the DRC. So that those are the sticking issues that we need to deal with, and I think those are within your domain and the President Ramaphosa's domain to deal with. The second one is on the issue of the human rights, and I agree with the Honorable Begikadev in terms of because of the United Nations have launched an investigation in the Kasai region,
And I think the human rights atrocities have now escalated to also the Katanga region, which creates even more of a problem. And I think every effort from the SADC in particular, and ourselves as the chair of SADC, in ensuring that those the United Nations is allowed the space to conduct the necessary investigation into the human rights abuses that are happening within the Kasai and the Katanga region, because of there's been resistance from the Kabila regime to allow the space for those human rights investigations to proceed. So perhaps unlocking that and ensuring that the human rights atrocities are addressed would also assist in the process. The third one is on the issue of the elections. And I think Honorable Maira asked the constitutionality of the issue, and that is at the essence of the problem, because according to the constitution, President Kabila should have been gone by 2016, and there's been an extended unconstitutional 2-year extension of him staying in office, much causing the domestic that we experience in the DRC. But one of the sticking points was the issue of the credibility of the voters' role. I'm not sure how far is that process at in terms of one of the challenges of holding free and fair credible elections. I'm not sure that whether the voters' role has been cleaned and whether South Africa has lended a hand in terms of cleaning up the voters' roll, because that was one of the sticking points, to say how do you hold elections without a credible voters' roll. Has that issue been addressed? And other sticking issues that are an impediment towards the December election. Are we sure that this time we are sticking to the target date of December the 23rd in terms of the elections? Because the most important and fundamental thing is to ensure that the elections are held so that there is democratic transition. If that doesn't happen, then we face a recurrence of the violence and the human rights abuses that we are experiencing. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you. Madam Bergman.
Chair, thanks. I've mostly been covered, but just to say that I found SADC to be almost a compromised organization in terms of negotiating or in peacekeeping efforts. I mean, if you look at three of the countries currently within SADC that are facing challenges, South Africa, in terms of its heavy investments in terms of both human resources and monetary resources, probably is more credible in the body itself. Now, in terms of trying to make sure that the elections take place in 2018, I think we've got to probably do a lot from our side to ensure that election monitoring doesn't start a few weeks before the elections, but that we widen the scope of electioneering and election monitoring by ensuring that we are hitting deadlines for ensuring that elections will take place. I find it ironic, of course, that part of the agreement is not to interfere in other countries. Yet we find it very easy to interfere in some other countries. Some countries are more equal than others. So I would just suggest that maybe South Africa, above SADC, look at forming the election monitoring, some form of a committee that can ensure some deadlines, ensure that people are monitoring those deadlines, and that come December 2018 that there actually is an election that takes place.
Thank you very much, Honorable Bergman, Honorable Mashabe.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yeah, it appears that President Kabila doesn't want to relinquish power because of the delay in holding elections in the DRC. And again, this delay in holding the elections in the DRC compounds both political and economic challenges in this country. Then how sure are we that peaceful elections will be held in the DRC without shedding blood? Thank you very much.
Honorable Kenya, welcome, Honorable Kenya.
Thank you, Chairperson. Sharing the same sentiment with my colleagues, I'm concerned about also this delay of elections. Now, it is recurrent. Now, I just want to check, is South Africa is committed to provide support to ensure fair elections in DRC in 2018? What mechanisms, therefore, is South Africa supposed to do to see that really this time around the elections do happen in 2018, not to escalate for to be extended? Also, what can be done? Maybe I don't know whether I can say the Hunt Committee there is this obligation to peace, security and cooperation framework. I don't think it is only the issue of the voters' role. I think there's also an agenda that is creeping. Because to say it's the voters' role alone, that can take this long standing issue of the elections. Also, I was also concerned that what is the constitution saying about this? Somebody to stay for quite a long time, as much as we know that as a country, we have to honor, we are going to interfere in the sovereignty of a country. But the fact that there is a problem with the constitution, therefore it takes us long that if we say we want to support, we are supporting the DRC and also have been long as a peacekeeping country, and concerned about peacekeeping and are struggling with peacekeeping of the world as a whole. But what can we therefore provide more support necessarily to see that really December, come December, the elections can take place. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. Honorable Kota, we have received a presentation from DERCO on the situation in the DRC. So members were asking questions and making their comments. I want to ask one or two questions or one or two comments, Minister. and perhaps the question doesn't have to be answered here and now. You could investigate it. And it is that given the history of strife and violence and instability in the DRC, Ono Hadeva was talking about the assassination of the first prime minister, and of course the takeover by the next president, who was first president, Mobutu Sese Seko. Then there's been a dictatorship, then there was the takeover of Laurent Kabila, now his son Joseph Kabila. But I'm talking about the history of the country. If the elections are held this year or today, and of course the elections must be held, the reason that the president provided that there's no money is just not acceptable, could have borrowed the money. If the elections are held and there's a change of a president, the same party, or there's a different party, do we think, now we, the continent now and the international community, do we think this violence, this interference by the external actors will abate, because that party would not be in power, or that person referring to the president would not be, given the vested interest of different players? And I have a worry about that. And probably the leadership of the continent would have the same worry in the context of Africa Agenda 2063, which demands, amongst others, that by 2020 we should have silenced the guns, because without peace there will be no development in any part of the region of Africa. Now, whether this then would lend itself to the DRC being a failed state would be another. But it's something that we have to look at. The other comment I thought I should make is that the United Nations, despite its intervention over all of these years, there seem to be some half-heartedness of the powers that actually have the best possible influence. Your USA, your Russia, your China, perhaps they don't agree, but they seem to be very half-hearted and things continue to be the way they are. And this is compounded by the two countries that are accused of interference. I don't know what their interest would be. The president of Rwanda, President Kagame, and the president of Uganda, President Museveni. But you see, you have then to look at the DRC in the context of the entire Great Lakes region, which is a cauldron of instability itself as a region. And now this is one of the richest states or countries within that region. It's awash with so many mineral resources. If it were to be peaceful and stable and develop, in fact, it would be in the interest of both the region and the continent. And it could be the iron of history that its instability, that is the DRC, is in fact the instability and lack of development for the continent. Perhaps there must be an ongoing discussion about it. And when I was talking about Rwanda and Uganda, it is the fact that they are accused of clandestinely funding and training the M23 forces. But the DRC, just like Burundi, and just like South Sudan around Darfur, has a lot of militia. Small groups in South Sudan is called the White Army, but they are small groupings. Now, there was this saying by one of the rebels or one of the soldiers of the militia, this gun is our food. If you read the article written by Alex Devan, this gun is our food. In the DRC, could it be the case that for the M23 and for the others, without a gun, they don't have food? These guns are their food. It's something that we must investigate and see if people are not using this as their food too. So, yeah, Minister, I was just throwing in a lot of things, but there's a worry that one of the countries that has a potentially very rich is unable to develop. The minister will remember that the Inga Dam, which is supposed to supply water, is supposed to supply hydroelectricity, there are many good forests in the DRC, etc., can't take off because of instability, all of those. We'll allow the minister to make some responses to the department. Over to the minister.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think most of the questions that have been asked indicates that we are all very concerned about the DRC, and we've taken time to understand the matter. Indeed, we have invested a lot of money and energy in the DRC. I took over as Minister of Defense from Minister Lekota, who took his jacket and walked out. He's still ready to walk out. But our troops have been part of MONUC from the time that Minister Lekota was there. That shows our commitment. That was after we had spent several years at the Sun City trying to ensure that there is peace in the DRC. Our efforts have borne fruit. We did have a government that worked in the DRC. And I think what is missing in the slide is the fact that the reason why we had an election in 2011, is because between MONUC and the South African Defense Force, we literally assisted in running that election. The topography of that of the DRC just makes it impossible for the country itself to run its own election. So perhaps what we could do is consider the possibility of finding a way of assisting them. That would be one way of pushing them towards doing what is right and making sure that there is election. We sent the Defence Force, the South African Defence Force, and we were able to drop off the ballot boxes at the polling stations, which would not have been accessible at all had it not been that situation. The fact that the elections have to happen is a must.
It's a must.
That is why it is on the agenda of the OGAN and the SADC heads of state, because we need that stability. We have been reliably assured that President Kabila is willing to step aside and allow normal processes to continue. He just needs the necessary assurance that they will not deteriorate into the kind of crisis that they have experienced in the past. But the DRC still needs a lot of our help. That we must understand. It's not just their fault that these elections have been dragging on so far. It is the fact that perhaps we might have tired of supporting them, but they need support. The DRC is not just the richest country on the continent. It is the richest country in the world. In terms of its mineral wealth, it is the richest country in the world. If we assist in unleashing that potential, we as the African continent would be so much better with those resources spent in our direction. The credibility of the voters' role continues to be a concern. But when I was, as I indicated, had taken over from a sulking Mr. Lukota here, when I was in the DRC, we worked very closely with the Electoral Commission of the DRC, and we found that their systems had been greatly assisted by ours. They are capable of running an election, given the necessary support. I think Mr. Bergman wants to know if the electoral body should not be supported. I think we should offer to support. South Africa has the best electoral commission in Africa, and it stands ready to assist anybody. So perhaps if the portfolio committee were to ask the commission if they would be ready to assist, that is one way in which we could say South Africa stands ready to assist in these ways and be part of the solution towards making sure that we have stability in the DRC. Given its history of violence, is it possible for the DRC to return to normality? Yes, it is. It did return to normality. After we spent a great deal of time talking to the various parties there, there was normality in the DRC for a very long time. It is possible. But we would need to be there to make sure that it is done. It is in our interest that there is an election, and it is our interest that that place is a peaceful place, and I'm glad that we're discussing the matter. We will be having a heads of state meeting, as I indicated, and when we're done with that, I will come and brief the committee on what the outcome of the heads of state is on this matter, because it is very high on the agenda. We are all very concerned about the DRC. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Minister. Proceed with South Sudan. Thank you, Minister. South Sudan.
Thank you, Chairperson. The political landscape in South Sudan remains tense due to recurrent clashes between the government forces and different armed groups, particularly in the Upper Nile, Yongje, Western Bar, and the Greater Equatorial Region. Political divisions and mistrust among rival parties in the conflict, namely the SPLM in government, SPLM in opposition, the former detainees, and the splinter rebel groups, exacerbate instability in the country. Currently, General Paul Malong, who's the former Army Chief of Staff, is being accused of leading his rebel forces from exile in Kenya. And these accusations come from President Salva Kiir and the SPLM in government. Dr. Riek Machar, who's the leader of the SPLM in opposition, remains a guest of the South African government since 2016. The region holds the view that, the region being the IGAD region, holds the view that if Dr. Machar is allowed back into the region, it would create instability for the region, not just for South Sudan. And therefore, none of those countries in the region is willing to host Dr. Machar. The South African government has currently been inundated with letters from various members of the SPLM in opposition and other sympathizers who purport that Dr. Machar is currently under house arrest in South Africa and is denied his freedom of association. They feel that he should not be secluded. On the issue of Mr. John Ingley, who's a colonel of the erstwhile SADF, he was recently sentenced to death by hanging in South Sudan for contravening the South Sudan National Security Act on espionage and an attempt to overthrow a sitting government on the 23rd of February. The South African government is doing its very best through diplomatic channels and bilateral engagements with South Sudan to try and intervene on behalf of Mr. Ingley and his family. On the IGAD Plus and the high-level revitalization forum, to date, there have been two of such meetings. The first phase of the forum took place from the 18th to the 22nd of December in Addis Ababa in Ethiopia. In its conclusion, there was a signing amongst the parties in South Sudan of an agreement on cessation of hostilities, protection of civilians, and humanitarian access. But we're very concerned that despite the signing of this agreement, the violations continue of the ceasefire agreement continues to date in South Sudan. The South Sudanese parties and stakeholders met again recently, which was the second phase of the forum, from the 5th to the 16th of February, and they again were working on trying to revitalize the ACRIS. The forum is organized by the IGAD to make necessary adjustments to the ACRIS with a view to A, restore the permanent ceasefire, B, to achieve full and inclusive implementation of the ACRIS, and thirdly, to develop a revised and realistic timeline and implementation schedule towards democratic elections at the end of the transitional period. The continued violations of the ceasefire agreement was strongly condemned by various international actors, and they include, amongst others, the United Nations, the African Union, the Troika made of the US, the UK, and Norway. And who are also open to imposing sanctions on leaders violating ceasefire agreements. Sanctions would then seek to penalize those who are ensuring that the conflict in South Sudan is prolonged. The JMAC also reiterated the need for all stakeholders to find within themselves a desire to set aside the guns and settle the differences through dialogue and compromise. On the humanitarian situation in South Sudan, of course, the conflict has resulted in a humanitarian crisis that has severely impacted on food security, health, livelihoods of communities, and nearly 4 million people have been forced to leave their homes. Of this 4 million, 2 million are IDPs, and the other 2 million has moved into neighboring countries. And of course, Uganda has claimed 1 million of those 2 million refugees. Famine was declared last year in some of the conflict areas, especially in the Unity State. Humanitarian workers at the moment continue to be targets in the conflict as well, which then, of course, violate international humanitarian law. In 2017, 178 workers were killed in South Sudan, with a total of 84 killed
since the conflict began in December 2013. South Africa is currently finalizing its project of providing humanitarian assistance to the victims of famine and political conflict in South Sudan, and we are hoping that if everything goes well, by end of April we should have been able to deliver the first consignment. And the package includes non-GMO seed sorghum, non-GMO red beans, iodated salt, and pure sunflower cooking oil. Implications for South Africa: we remain actively involved in the efforts towards sustainable or lasting peace in South Sudan. South Africa is part of a number of peace efforts, and these include us participating in the high-level forum that I mentioned earlier as members of the IGAD Plus. You'd recall that we were nominated to serve in the IGAD Plus by the African Union Peace and Security Council. We're also participating actively in the party-to-party talks to date that were led by President Ramaphosa at the time when he was the deputy president, aimed at ensuring the reunification of the SPLM and assisting in transforming it from a liberation movement into a ruling party. And of course, we continue sharing our experiences of conflict resolution. And there we include the importance, the message that we send across is the importance of political dialogue as a mechanism to find sustainable resolution to political differences. In 2017, South Africa, through the In Transformation Forum, an NGO working in the field of conflict resolution and peace building, we hosted the workshop of members of the National Dialogue. The purpose of the workshop was to share South African experience during the dialogue, national dialogue, that resulted in the advent of our democracy in 1994. So we continue with that. South Africa remains committed to supporting all the efforts, of course, aimed at finding a lasting solution. We remain concerned by the negative effects of political violence and armed confrontation amongst various armed groups in South Sudan, including violations of ceasefire agreements, resulting in the displacement of people and massive humanitarian needs. South Africa also stands ready to support the AU peace processes, welcomed the efforts by the IGAD, including the IGAD Plus, in ensuring the involvement of all key stakeholders in South Sudan peace process, including the participation of all parties to the agreement, which is the ACRIS. We stand ready to, of course, continue providing support to the government of South Sudan, and in the context of humanitarian assistance, I've already spoken to that, post-conflict reconstruction, and the development of imperatives for South Sudan. Chairperson, I think I would end there. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the presentation on South Sudan. Let's hear the members.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you for the work that has been done in trying to resolve the South Sudan conflict. Just a question on the issue of Riek Machar. There's been a perception that he's under house arrest in South Africa, of which Tiko is refuting to say he's a guest. But what happens back home with his generals and lieutenants? Who interacts with them on his behalf as part of the revitalized IGAD? And the reason why I'm asking that question is there is a talk that her wife will take over as part of the revitalized IGAD in some position there. And the negotiations of the revitalized IGAD doesn't it perpetuate the same problem? Because of even though you might be having all-inclusive stakeholders, but without Riek Machar, who is being seen as a threat to the stability of South Sudan, how credible is it, or wouldn't there be a recurrence of going back once the transition negotiations has happened? Because the reason why South Sudan is where it is because of that. So how is the communication happening there in terms of the discussions without Riek Machar? Is he represented? Or what is the status with his army and all those things? And in terms of the sentencing of William Endley, I'm aware that there are diplomatic channels that are being followed, but there was the sentencing said he had 15 days to appeal the sentence, and the days are going by. Will there be any appeal, or are we following the diplomatic channels and hope the 15 days will resolve before the end of the lapse of the request for appeal by the court? And I think the last one is definitely on the issue that the chairperson raised when we were dealing with the DRC. Me and him, we are reading an article about the conflict of South Sudan. And part of the problem, it is the so-called white army, the militias that just come in. Every time there is dispute, one soldier just decides to form a rebel group. Somehow they just have followers. How those followers come to be is just unknown. The revitalized IGAD, that is it conscious of the fact of just the sprawling of small, medium rebel groups that when they see that there are negotiations, they would want to be on the table? Is there rules of engagement when it comes to those? Thank you very much, Chief.
Thank you,
Honorable. Thank you, Chairperson. I once more also appreciate the presentation which is coming from DERCOM. But the first question you should ask is the issue of, you know, Agenda 2063 is very clear that there can be no development without peace. There can be no peace without development. So on the issue of South Sudan, we know very well that the oil wells of South Sudan and the ones which are actually developed, which are actually maintaining Sudan, which is at the north. And then what has been done up to this point to ensure that the monetary accrual coming from the wealth is distributed to the people of South Sudan? Because I think that if that wealth was distributed to the people of South Sudan, there will be no need for conflict in moving forward. I think that if that thing cannot be resolved, I think the conflict will continue, because people will start now fighting for whatever meager resources they are having. Number two, Chair, on the issue of the South African citizens, we know very well that in South Africa, there's no capital punishment. And we know very well that we are supporting South Sudan left, right, and center. I think that on the side of JECO, it must make it unequivocally clear to the government of South Sudan that South Africa is not going to accept that his citizen must be murdered. Because I think when he went there as part of the interest of Riek Machar in helping with negotiations. So when they made that peace deal, whether he was supposed to be part of that peace deal. So we are not really, I think that as South Africa, we are not going to accept a situation where one of us is going to be murdered. We know that we cannot condone. If he has committed any crimes, we cannot condone that, those crimes. He must be tried by the court, but when coming to his hanging, yeah, the must made very clear that we are not going to agree with that. Even if necessary, we'll call for the South African government to withdraw its support, because we cannot tolerate that. Number two, Chairperson, on the issue of this issue of end money, it probably makes me
I'm not comfortable with that. I think it must be resolved.
Honorable Kenya.
Thanks, Jefferson. Thank you for the presentation. Really, we are touched by this fact that about William John Engle, because we know that, as Honorable has just said, that it is frustrating us, because we know that we are abolished death sentence in South Africa. Therefore, we don't need any hanging of one of the human being. If any human being is especially the South African, we can't just keep quiet. So that's why also I was worried about this term that says still utilizing diplomatic channels. For how long? Because this needs a time frame, because the time is running fast. And then this makes me to remember the issue of Amina Lawal, who was to be hanged, a woman who was to be hanged just because of being pregnant. In South Africa, we stood up and then we saved the life of Amina Lawal in those years. So I think this time around must also save the life of William John Engle in South Africa. Secondly, on the issue, noting that there is an observer team of 25 South Africans, so to support Senator Fadda, I mean, that people of South Sudan would vote for independent state. How far are we there? Because also that needs to be looked at. Because I understand that I don't even hear the time claim from that referendum, which was something like South Sudan. Thank you very much.
Thank you,
Honorable
Mashabela.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mine is on the issue of Dr. Rick Masha. What is the position of South Africa on the house arrest of Dr. Masha in our country? And what efforts has our country taken to defuse tribal conflicts between the two leaders and their followers? Thank you.
Thank you very much. I also want to join the members by asking one or two comments. Now, earlier on, I was saying, just to join Honorable Mukhalapa, I was saying that there is an article by Alex Deval, who did some what they call ethnographic research. He lived there for some 10 or 15 years, in Sudan, in Darfur. Now, among the people that he was interviewing, if it's not Diwali, then it should be John Hutchinson, somebody like that. One of the rebel leaders among the White Army, is just a word that is loosely used to describe the rebels in the militia, said this gun is our food. In other words, they use these guns to raid cattle, which is an old practice in the South Sudan. They take over the food of other people, they take over women, they raid them, all of these kind of things. Now, it's been part of the culture of that country. But secondly, it also depends among these rebel groups. These rebel groups have been exploited by the leadership and we're talking South Sudan. There are rebel groups that belong to Salva Kiir. There are rebel groups that belong to Riek Machar. Now, they use these guns also to kill each other from a tribal point of view. So there's also a challenge of ethnicism between the main tribal groups, the Nuer of Riek Machar and the Dinka of President Salva Kiir. But the waters continue to be muddied even by the Sudan Defense Force from Khartoum now. Because you see, the government of Sudan did not want South Sudan to secede. It's been an ongoing fight for years on end. Right then came 2011.
There was a referendum, then they seceded. Then they tried to negotiate that they share the profits of the oil. Because the oil fields and the pipelines and the refineries of Greater Sudan, if there's a word like that, Greater Sudan, happen to be in the South Sudan. Now, in other words, there is no economic life for Sudan of Omar al-Bashir without some of these resources, the lucrative resources, in the South. And therefore they export or they generate deliberately this violence down there for their own self-interest. Now, with, of course, working with external companies, oil companies. So, you see, that's part of, I don't know, what would you want to say about that? And then, so, when the department comes back one day, it must just try to say, what is the role of the external actors like your United Nations? Again, I feel that they are being meek. And they could be meek because the USA, Russia, and China, who also have interest there, particularly for now, it is China, they may be half-hearted in their provision of solutions. What should happen? Secondly, I'm asking myself about the enforceability of the Arusha Agreement, the CPA, the Comprehensive Peace Agreement. Does it need a military enforcement or it needs a political enforcement? Because at a political level, I see, with due respect, I see a failure of leadership at different levels. Within the country, that is South Sudan now, and then the AU, the regional structure, I don't know whether it's EAC, I don't know, SADC, we're not there, and the AU. Their voice is not loud and clear about what they think should happen to that country. And yet somewhere we say Africa must solve its own problems. So we have that kind of a challenge. The issue of the standoff between Riek Machar and Salva Kiir, which has taken an ethnic dimension, it may be very difficult to solve. Because you see, here you have a leadership that first was fighting for the self-determination of the South. Okay, let's say they work together. Then they got their self-determination 2011. Then they fight among themselves. So in other words, you must have a small Anyana state for Riek Machar and a small Anyana state for Salva Kiir. Then you may have another one becoming a leader of another ethnic group, depending on where the oil is. You see, this is a problem for the continent and for this country. No. Someday when you come back, please do come and say, this is what you have investigated, this is what you find. Now, but my view is that the AU, just to be clear, the AU and the regional body and the UNO, the United Nations, must prevail over Khartoum, must prevail over the government of President al-Bashir about their activities in South Sudan. Now the last issue is the one that members were talking about, the issue of William Andley. I hold a slightly different view because of a particular view I have, and it could be a wrong view. It is that, was William Andley conducting mercenary work in Sudan, Baba Biza and the Soldiers of Fortune, was he doing that? And if a court of law in that country can prove that
he was actually conducting military mercenary work, and he's probably not won't be the only one. You may find that people come from all over the world and from all over Africa to be hired soldiers for this particular purpose and for particular groupings. You see, groupings for Salva Kiir, groupings for this. If they are found to have been doing that, what is the position of South Africa? What will be the position of the AU regarding work like that? Because you see, if they are violating the laws of a particular country and they are tried in terms of the laws of that country, what are we going to be doing? Because indeed, there is no death penalty in South Africa. But if there's death penalty in that country where you are doing risky job, what should we do? One option for the DERGO is that let's assume that the court will not be objective. It could ask that William Endley and others, if there are others, could be tried by the International Court of Justice, which we think it will be objective. But it could come to the same determination that Endley and others were indeed soldiers of fortune. So in other words, you're trying to solve this problem. You can't solve it because you have people like this. And obviously, he can't be the only one. You should have many people coming from all over the world to do this kind of thing. I think the International Court of Justice would be kind of an honest, neutral arbiter in a matter like this. Over to, you want to come back, Honorable Khadebe?
What is good is the International Court of Justice does not have a death sentence. I think that's the crux of the matter.
That's why we said that he can, if he committed any crime, he must be tried according to the law. But the issue of the death sentence is the issue.
What am I now?
You know, one other worrying thing is this thing of the killing of humanitarian aid workers. Because then, have people been tried for these atrocities? The other problem is there is famine in the country, but the soldiers are never hungry. And the issue of the illicit flow of arms. Because can we identify the source of the supply of arms? Because that is something which needs to be arrested. Thank you very much.
Yeah, just one or two. Are there any policy recommendations or interventions that the department thinks of to solve the conundrum of South Sudan beyond South Africa? So South Africa is just one of the countries in Africa, or one of the countries in SADC. But at a higher level, at the level of the UNO, at the level of the AU, at the level of the regional structure, can somebody prevail over this matter? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Maybe let me start off by saying we do welcome all the comments that were made. And we will take note of them, and on other issues where you said that we would come back to you in the future, we will indeed also look at that and come back to you in the future when you come here. Let me start off with questions around William Endley. Chairperson, William Endley is a South African, and as the government, it's our responsibility to intervene on behalf of South Africans, irrespective of whether they are there for one or the other reason. In fact, we don't even go into that. If he was there because of mercenarism or because of whatever reason, we don't get into that. What we get into is to say South Africa is an abolitionist state. We don't condone death penalty. And therefore, we do everything in our power to ensure that South African citizens sentenced abroad, including William Endley, are not sentenced to death. In this regard, practically what have we done to date? I've mentioned in my presentations about diplomatic channels. Have diplomatic channels doesn't sound
palatable or maybe not very sexy, but I must say that we've even engaged at the level of the Vice President of South Sudan. So when we talk about diplomatic channels, we don't only mean that we send the ambassadors and so on, but we've gone to the highest level on that. So we're doing the best that we can do on that one. On issues around the efforts that South Africa is doing, I've mentioned that we've got various channels that we're doing to try and bring an end to the conflict in South Sudan, or perhaps find a lasting solution. Part of that is that we've had a special envoy to South Sudan, or then it was Deputy President Cyril Ramaphosa. But of course now he is the president, he cannot be his own special envoy. We've raised the issue with him, and we're hoping that very soon he will be able to appoint a special envoy. And then we'll continue with also the party-to-party engagements and so on and so forth. You also mentioned something around mercenarism. I just want to quickly indicate that South Africa, at the level of the United Nations, we are championing a process of trying to hold private military and security companies accountable in international law. At this stage, there's a vacuum in international human rights law on holding these entities accountable. So South Africa is championing that. As of this year, which is in April, they would start drafting a document that would eventually, if adopted, would be able to assist us in terms of holding private military and security companies accountable in international human rights law. I've also mentioned that part of our participation is through the IGAD Plus. And we have also mentioned that the IGAD Plus, we were appointed as members of the African Union. So the African Union is involved, and we are involved through the African Union. I think I can stop there, because most of the questions were comments, and they were talking to each other. So thank you very much, Chair. Oh, Dr. Riek Machar, the presence of Dr. Riek Machar. Dr. Riek Machar, Chairperson, is not under house arrest. And Dr. Riek Machar, when the IGAD Plus was preparing for the first phase of negotiations in December, he was consulted through Ethiopia, who is the chairperson of the IGAD. Ethiopia invited him to appoint representatives. So we facilitated a meeting between the Ethiopian ambassador in Pretoria and Dr. Riek Machar, in fact several meetings, wherein he also then appointed who he wanted as his representative in the process. So he is involved, he's constantly kept updated by his representative on the process. So he's not excluded in the process. Thank you very much.
Chairperson, on the issue, the question was not answered, the issue of the oil revenue. You raise it. How this country help in ensuring that the oil revenue goes back to its population and its government, so that it can develop its people? Is there in this help that are provided for South Sudan? Is there such an aspect of help which is coming from the IGAD itself and South Africa in particular?
No, at this stage, I don't have an answer on how we make sure that the oil revenues do filter down to the citizenry. But maybe I forgot to answer the one question on humanitarian assistance, and somebody said that the soldiers and all of it. For our part as South Africa, I said we are finalizing humanitarian assistance to South Sudan. What we then decided to do was we identified faith-based organizations, some Islamic and Christian, as NGOs that would be distributing to the people. So it's not that we are going to be giving humanitarian assistance to the government that would then be given to the soldiers and so on and so forth. We're trying to make sure that it actually goes directly to the people. And we've decided that when that humanitarian assistance lands in South Sudan, we will be there as their co, together with our mission in South Sudan, and try and make sure that indeed their humanitarian assistance is not redirected elsewhere where it is not intended. So we're working on that. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Now we migrate to Morocco. You know, I did some election work in Namibia. Now, one of the Namibians told me that the name of their former president, Hifikepunye Pohamba, Hifikepunye means I'm not your equal, and Pohamba is a king. Now, the way this former president is named, when he introduces himself to you, he actually says, I'm not your equal, I'm your king. when you make him a special envoy, I wonder if he's not been using his name as the name on behalf of SADC, you know, to clamp down on anyone else. Over to you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. We are going to talk about our relations with Morocco, and obviously also within the context of our position with regard to the Sahrawi Arab Democratic Republic, Western Sahara. And so the starting point in this regard is an appraisal of the status, the current status of our bilateral relations with Morocco, which remains strained since South Africa's formal recognition of Western Sahara way back in 2004. But I think it is also important to indicate from the outset that South Africa continues to maintain its principled position on the illegal occupation of the Western Sahara and the right of the Sahrawi people to self-determination. Now, Morocco recalled their ambassador to South Africa in 2004, and subsequently South Africa was also not able to obtain an agreement for our ambassador to Morocco. So as we speak now, our relations are maintained at a level of a chargé and not at a level of a full ambassador. In 2016, Morocco submitted a formal request, because in fact they are the ones who withdrew their ambassador in the first instance. So in 2016 they submitted a formal request for an agreement because they wanted to appoint an ambassador to South Africa. That process was not finalized, and we have learned that recently they have now appointed a new person to serve here as their ambassador. We have not as yet received a request for an agreement in that regard. But perhaps it's important to indicate that former President Zuma and the King of Morocco met in November last year on the margins of the EU, or rather AU-EU summit in Abidjan. And one of the outcomes of that meeting was that South Africa and Morocco would again exchange ambassadors, effectively suggesting that we would be elevating once more our relations with Morocco to ambassadorial level. This decision was also reiterated in January this year when our former minister met with her counterpart in Morocco. However, the decision have not yet been activated by both countries. With regards to Morocco's admission to the African Union, we are all aware that Morocco mobilized a number of countries on the continent to support their admission to the African Union. Of course, this was informed by a new strategic orientation taken by the King of Morocco, that they want to come back to the fold, and as someone put it, they almost realized that the empty chair politics would not be sustainable, and therefore, if they want to extend their sphere of influence on the continent, they have to be part of the AU. And so they took that strategic decision. Now, it is important to note that South Africa, Algeria, and other like-minded countries were not very keen on this, especially because of the fact that Morocco continued to express the sentiment that Western Sahara is just but one of their provinces. If you like, they refer to it as the southern province of Morocco. And the view taken by South Africa was that if Morocco were to be admitted to the AU, then there has to be a condition that suggests that they would not use their membership to mobilize other countries to de-recognize Western Sahara. But they won the debate, they prevailed with a significant majority of 39 countries out of the 55 countries. However, during the summit where they were admitted, there were very strong views by member states that Morocco must abide by the Constitutive Act, and that it must immediately resolve its relations with Western Sahara to ensure the territorial integrity of both states. At its January meeting this year, the African Union Peace and Security Council further amplified this point, and as part of its decision, indicated that there was a need to determine a date for the holding of the referendum for the self-determination of the people of Western Sahara in compliance with the OAU, AU decisions and UN resolutions. Secondly, there was a request for the restoration of the full civilian component of the United Nations mission for the referendum in Western Sahara. Thirdly, the request for the extension of the mandate of MINUSO to include monitoring of human rights, the need to stop illegal exploration and exploitation of Western Sahara natural resources in the main phosphates, and the reactivation of the ad hoc committee of heads of state and government on the conflict in Western Sahara. Of importance, again in this regard, was a call for the Kingdom of Morocco and Western Sahara to immediately engage in direct and serious talks without preconditions and in compliance with the Constitutive Act. It is perhaps important, Chair, to stress that Morocco, despite these pronouncements, continues to be disruptive when it comes to Western Sahara being recognized by other countries and Western Sahara having full participation in African Union business. we are also made aware of their intention at the last AU-EU summit in Abidjan to try and convince the Ivory Coast not to invite Western Sahara to the summit. However, it was made very clear by the AU that the summit would not continue without Western Sahara being part of the deliberation. So quite clearly, there is a clear agenda on the side of Morocco to marginalize Western Sahara, a clear agenda to mobilize African countries to de-recognize Western Sahara. We suspect that that is their ultimate prize. Our position in South Africa is that there is a need to strengthen former President Chissano of Mozambique, who we're told will be appointed as the AU representative for Western Sahara, with a mandate to facilitate direct talks between the two member states and to mobilize African and UN efforts towards this direction. We are convinced, Chairperson, that Morocco will probably continue with its diplomatic offensive to convince Africa of the legitimacy of their cause and persuade that Western Sahara be regarded as a southern province of Morocco. As part of this offensive, they have also applied for full ECOWAS membership, the Regional Economic Community of West Africa. And in one of their summits, ECOWAS, we are told, agreed in principle to consider this request. Of course, AU was the first area of focus. Now they are moving into the regional economic community, and hopefully they would want to use that platform as a basis for raising resolutions within the African Union on the issue of Western Sahara. Of course, they are also going to be using the platform that has now been presented to them, because they have been elected to the Peace and Security Council of the African Union as a member representing the North African region. And they've got 2 years there, 2018 to 2020. And this happened in January this year. Of concern to us is that Morocco, the African Union rather, must try by all means to avoid Morocco trying to move the discussion on Western Sahara to the United Nations, because part of their strategy is to move the debate away from Africa on Western Sahara to the United Nations. Of course, with the view that once the matter is being looked at that level, processes would be slower than if it is looked by the immediate continental body, the African Union. So in a sense, you could argue that they are buying time in this regard. Now, what is our position in South Africa? Indeed, we maintain that the occupation of Western Sahara by Morocco is illegal, and that the Sahrawi people must exercise their right to self-determination. This position, Chair, is based on the principles underpinning the UN General Assembly Resolution 1514. I'm not going to go through the principles themselves, safe to say that at the center of this is the need for Morocco to respect international humanitarian law and to end the illegal exploration and exploitation of natural resources of Western Sahara. There are some interesting developments in this regard, Chair. You would recall that there is a ship that was seized in Port Elizabeth, destined for Australia, with a cargo of a huge tonnage of phosphate. And these were mined in the area illegally occupied by Morocco in Western Sahara. So in a sense, these are resources of Western Sahara that are being plundered and sold to benefit Morocco. Perhaps the last point here that I need to make is that with the diplomatic offensive that Morocco has been embarking upon, we have seen a slight shift in thinking from some of the countries who traditionally were against Morocco's occupation of Western Sahara. They seem to be lukewarm now about their position. And because South Africa, Algeria, and other countries were at the forefront of this campaign, it becomes critical and necessary that we lead the charge to reignite support for Western Sahara. In this regard, we are excited by the fact that at the last SADC summit hosted by South Africa last year, a decision was taken to host an international solidarity conference, which will be one of, I guess, a series of initiatives aimed at once more to support Western Sahara. Currently, South Africa is engaging with Namibia with a view to request Namibia to host this international solidarity conference. Perhaps let me end there.
Thank you very much for your presentation. Did you record your names with the Sultan? Okay. Honorable Mukhalafa.
First one. Perhaps it gives an opportunity for the African Union
just to rethink its position and ensure that they use the readmission of Morocco into the EU to try and work in persuading or collaborating or cooperation, whatever the appropriate diplomatic word might be, for Morocco to try and solve the Sahrawi question. And I think just like any part of being in a conflict, you don't attempt to be neutral in getting the facts of both sides. You run the risk of seeming to be being biased to one side and the other. And I think unequivocally, we all agree that the Sahrawi people must have self-determination. It's very important, it must happen. But perhaps it's just the way how that can be achieved. And that is why I'm putting this emphasis of saying, play the game and don't hate the player. Because of if the international community, especially the AU, play, it's very nice. Because what they are doing is once they get the ECOWAS membership, they've got their regional bloc that is powerful outside of the SADC to influence the AU. So it will be a stalemate, and it might be a stalemate forever. So rather than avoiding a stalemate, let us ensure that we put our heads together and we come to the resolution using the AU and the UN in particular in terms of conflict mediation and resolution. Because of as it stands, I foresee a long-standing stalemate. Because the diplomatic offensive they are going on will go up until the UN, and once it gets to the UN, it's murky waters. It becomes another animal. So it's going to disappear into the Atlantic Ocean and every ocean that is there in the world. So if we want to address it at the AU, and at the rate that we are going, the king is going very fast with this train, and we are very slow thinking of old ways of just saying sanctions, invest, and what. That doesn't work in this modern economy. The economy now is integrated and interdependent. And the way they are doing with the ECOWAS, it's one of the strongest economic blocks in Africa, like I say, outside of the SADC. So the AU must wake up and smell the coffee here. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Kalapa, Honorable Kenya.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for the presentation. I think I share the same sentiment with Honorable Mahalapa. I think to admission of Morocco to AU, while they still is a very crucial problem of Western Sahara, because it's low to us as South Africa. Because really it was clear that they wanted to be part of the work on it, so that they work must move faster. Because the Sahrawi people have been in this critical position for more than 40 years. But now Morocco is there to be part, in spite of the situation not being through. Now it's admitted by EU. Yes, we understand majority decision prevails. But sometimes maybe we are too slow, as Honorable Morocco said, we are too slow to move. I'm worried that also when you're talking about this international solidarity that's hosted by Namibia, I'm worried. I don't want to say I have a question when is that going to be done, because really this train must be just a jet now, because to my understanding international solidarity will assist in local support for Western Sahara self-determination. Now that they want to get full ECOWAS membership, really, that is another blow. That will be another blow for the Western Sahara, because they want to be entrenched in the regional bloc, so that they succeed in taking Morocco as its province. We've been there in Western Sahara in 2015. We saw the conditions those people are living under. It is pathetic to live in such under conditions for 40 years. now they are trying to move the speed they are moving, Morocco is moving fast, so that they close the matter of Morocco of self-defense is closed. That's why they are moving fast. Really, I think I don't know when really that is the international can be, so that they'll be able to look also on our side, so that we are able to see that this the Morocco, the Western Sahara people do get this self-determination as said long ago by United Nations. Thank you very much.
No, thanks, Chair, and maybe let me also thank the presenter, because, I mean, the presentation is very comprehensive. Whilst I agree with my colleagues that Morocco is playing their cards very smart in trying to isolate the people of Western Sahara, but what they don't realize is that the patience of the people of Western Sahara also cannot be taken for granted. Because the people of Western Sahara are in a position where they have laid down arms in pursuance of a peaceful solution. But if Morocco keeps on making things difficult, we can also not guarantee the situation in Morocco itself, because this is actually pushing too hard on the people of Western Sahara, and what might result cannot be predicted. So as South Africa will never back off from saying the people of Western Sahara be free. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Maeda.
Thank you, Chairperson. The people of Western Sahara, Chairperson, continue to suffer, and their natural resources like phosphate exploited. And despite the strained relationship between South Africa and Morocco, Chairperson, what strategic role does South Africa continue to play in fighting for the sovereignty and freedom of Western Sahara? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mashabela. Honorable Dudley.
Thank you. One thing I've never understood clearly, and it might be very easy just to explain, and that is South Africa's position at the time of South Sudan wanting to secede and self-determine from the broader Sudan. And because that was an ongoing issue at the same time as we took that stand in terms of the Sahara, Western Sahara. So I just wondered what was different, because to me, I mean, when we've had delegations from Sahara and from Morocco, they've been brothers and cousins and uncles and brothers, so they weren't different people. And obviously, even in Sudan, there was quite a distinction between the people living in Khartoum and the people living in southern Sudan. And I'm just wondering, what informed our thinking then that made us so determined that there'd be one Sudan, while at the same time we were taking this strong stance? So it just may be a simple answer. If it's more complicated, I'm happy to get something in writing at some stage. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Chairperson. On the issue of Western Sahara and Morocco, Chairperson, there's a decision by European Court of Justice that all the countries of the EU are banned from trading on the products which are coming from Western Sahara, in particular the fisheries, the fishes, the blood, the phosphates. So it is there. What does South Africa do when it interacts with the EU to ensure that the member states of the EU comply with that court order? Because I think that the majority of these goods are going towards the EU. That's why in particular Spain and France. They're going towards Spain and France. So what does South Africa do when it engages Spain in particular, France in particular, and the other EU countries around the issue of the mineral resources and the agricultural resources which are coming from Western Sahara. Number two, Chair, is that South Africa also made commitments to the people of Western Sahara, in particular when coming to the issue of water and the stadium, which was supposed to have been built there by South Africa as far back when President Thabo Mbeki was still a president. How far did you go? Because, you know, what you must do, must avoid speaking in soft terms, that you expect other people to support when we're supposed, when we make commitments, and then we don't make follow-ups around that. So what is the status of the project which South Africa promised to Western Sahara people? That's the interest. And then on the issue of Morocco, Chair, is that there's nothing we can do now. Morocco is part of the EU, but what must happen is that there must be diplomatic pressure which must be exerted to Morocco that it complies with the constitutive act of the EU, so that it respects the decisions of the EU, in particular concerning the Western Sahara. Thank you.
Chair, can I ask on that point?
Yeah.
Just whether obviously the EU, we have our SAEU group,
yeah.
and that's not something that I'm aware that we've ever touched on. And if it's to be, perhaps that agenda should be should be a suggestion.
Chair, we'll be having another SAEU South Africa EU parliamentary summit in April. Last year, when they were here in South Africa, I read that in the
letter.
Yeah, South Africa. I read that and they were sharing away, but I think that they said that they are going to focus on that so that they monitor their own country. But all that, I think that it must also be raised again in the next summit.
I'm not seeing it on the agenda.
Let us put it on. Even the issue of the removal of the landmine. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, presenter. I suggest that we exhume the comments and the recommendations that we made in the qualifier that we held here in Parliament, because we did that in conjunction with the PDS and with the other structures that are supporting Western Sahara. They are very useful recommendations that we made there that fall outside Parliament, and see if they cannot inform and guide the DERCO government on what can be done. Because this came directly from the presenter on behalf of Western Sahara. One of the concepts that he clarified was that Morocco does not want the use of the word occupation. You see, and immediately they joined the AU. They actually said, no, you must not say occupation. I don't know what else they wanted, because as you are saying, they want to be regarded as a Western or Southern province. Now, in fact, these words are used in the following way, according to him. It's illegal occupation, illegal exploitation, illegal exploration. All these things that are happening there are historically illegal. And it gave an explanation to which I will not go because we don't have time. But you see, if you look at what happened in 1975, the country is supposed to, when Spain withdrew, 12 o'clock, then Morocco moved in, which shows you that there was a plan between Spain and Morocco to hand over. Because Spain was a colonial power. So when it withdrew,
he then handed over to Morocco, and Morocco has stuck to that to this day. And it is better understood when you know that the beneficiaries of, amongst others, the beneficiaries of this illegal occupation is actually Spain, is actually France, and France provides political protection for Morocco in the Security Council, because it's part of the P5. So you see, they use the very minerals of that country to fight political favor, which, as Mukhalapa was saying, and I don't agree with the other part that he was talking about, which he was saying, they then embark on the diplomatic charm offensive. At international level, they buy the favor of the USA, Spain, and France. Now, they are doing that with the African countries. How did it come that the members of the African Union, guided by their own constitution, the Constitutive Act, which says there shall be an independent Western Sahara, 39 members of the 54, 39 of them agree that Morocco must be readmitted or admitted, because some are saying readmission, some are saying no, it's just an admission, because they withdrew from the OAU, now this was an AU. And of course, there was no precondition. And then of course, what they are going to do, if they are members of the ECOWAS, as Mkhalapa was saying, if they are members of ECOWAS and they are in the AU, they are going to undermine the center, which is the AU. But most importantly, they are going to undermine SADC, because what we know is that SADC is the most loud voice and progressive voice within the AU about this shenanigans of Morocco. Where I don't agree with you, Mkhalapa, where you are saying, don't play the player, play the game.
Learn the game.
You see, what happens here is that the player, Morocco, assisted by these other countries, are not playing a fair game in this particular the game or whatever it is. We think that the international progressive humanity, and I'm saying it very advisedly, because even within the countries that are occupying others, you have people who actually feel that human rights is human rights. So you can say the whole USA or the whole Morocco, those who feel that other people have a right to self-determination are the ones who must feel that Morocco must be compelled to play a fair game. Earlier on, Khatebe drew our attention to the decision of the European Court. It did take that decision. In fact, the reason why Morocco rushed to the AU to ask to go and get membership is because of the heat they were getting from the AU into the United Nations. And when the European Court said no buying of goods from them, then they realized that they are getting isolated. They may have been advised by countries like France and other friends from whom they buy favor. This is very unfortunate that it could be the use of the rent, I mean they call it dollar diplomacy, that is at play here for these 39 countries and others. And then there was also you were talking about the thinking. Is it possible for South Africa, I don't know, because it's just one of the countries within SADC, it's one of the member states within the AU. Is it possible, I don't know, which court do you take this matter to? If the members of the AU are breaking their own constitution, because if there's a shift of thinking that, of course, maybe let's agree that Western Sahara be a province. That alone is breaking the constitution, the constitutive act of the African Union. You can't do that until you have changed it to say you're no longer recognized, and that is going to divide Africa. For me, rather than have Africa divided over a matter like this, actually you need to expel Morocco or put a condition that you can't be a member unless you agree to this. So they first admitted them without a precondition, then they are using money, then there's a change of thinking. Already they're 39, then they are going to go to a regional structure, the ECOWAS, buy a favor there. Then after they can isolate South Africa, isolate Algeria, they can say what they say, but they don't have the number. You can actually say, let's vote. Yeah. I'm just saying Morocco being a member with that. No. Then this is Algeria and South Africa. Let's vote on this matter. Then you get outvoted. That's the game. I don't like your understanding of the game,
it's a DA understanding. That's how they play.
We who were victims of don't want that game.
It's a multilateral game.
It's a DA game.
That's how it is.
No. Chair, thank you very much for the enriching comments. Quite clearly, Morocco did their homework, and they took their time in doing this. You would also recall that even though Morocco was outside the AU fold, they continued to interact with a number of African countries. Of course, this interaction became more pronounced as they were preparing for this application back to the AU. Now, in West Africa, the cultural, religious, economic and political ties between Morocco and those countries cannot be underestimated. They run very deep. The King of Morocco, also as part of this charm offensive, is using his traditional label, this royal label as the king, and interacts beyond governments in those countries, but with the traditional leadership as well, the religious leadership. And so, that's the first point. The second point is that, you cannot discount the influence and the interest of other international players. There was, of course, unhappiness among these players when South Africa took over the AU Commission chairpersonship. There's an argument that Morocco is trying to weaken the AU. But that's not just the agenda of Morocco. It's the agenda of those interests that would want to see a weakened continental body where they are then able to dictate to individual countries what should happen. And of course, this is all underpinned by interest in our natural resources. So the intention of Morocco is not only that, but also it's about its economic expansion. Once they get a hold on West Africa, what stops them from beginning to make inroads, even in inside the country? Chair, just last week, the Zambian Minister of Foreign Affairs announced that Zambia was considering to de-recognize Western Sahara. Now, that is the heart of SADC, the heart of a resistance or mobilization for the self-determination of Western Sahara. We are told also that Ghana is flirting with this idea of so Morocco's influence is going to go beyond the regional economic community. Chair, let me just go to the specific questions that were raised, because I thought I should just give a bit of context to some of the comments that were made. The question was, why are we worried about the cessation of Western Sahara, whereas with Sudan we took a different approach? Chair, very short answer is that indeed these are very complex matters. There's history, there are interests involved, but you would recall that with us, with South Africa, our relationship with Western Sahara through the liberation movement and the Polisario Front was informed in the main by a decolonization agenda. And it is for that reason that as South Africa we still maintain, you know, that position. What is worrying also is that apart from these countries in SADC and Western, what is most worrying is that if South Africa is going to play an influential role on the continent, we have to have a country like Nigeria with us. If you want to be a big player in the continent, you can't marginalize Nigeria. And in fact, we thought that Nigeria within ECOWAS would be the first to say no to Morocco. But no, they have not done that. Checkbook diplomacy, as you were indicating, Chair, was one of those issues. The King of Morocco visited Nigeria recently and announced a huge gas pipeline that is going to cut across some of the countries in the region, and most of those countries will benefit from that pipeline. So as they engage politically, they are also ensuring that you know, there are benefits that accrue to those that they want their support from. So it's a fairly well calculated a program on their side. Chair, we will take your suggestion that we look at the resolutions of the colloquium which was held on Western Sahara and see how that can dovetail with some of the recommendations that are beginning to emerge from our side as PIRCO. Then there was an issue, that this is the last point, Chair, about some of the EU countries violating the protocol on products from Western Sahara. This is going to be a long struggle, and I'm happy that during your interactions with Parliament you are also going to be raising this matter. It's an issue that has also been on the agenda when South Africa meets with its counterpart in the EU. It's one of the issues that we raise. In fact, the decision now by the High Court in Port Elizabeth is going to reinforce our position as well, because it has a potential of setting an international precedent which other countries then will try to, you know, shy away from. So we hope that that is a positive development in this regard. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much. And keep us posted on the solidarity contract. I think the committee should in fact be invited. Perhaps they will constitute a multi-party delegation from us here to go to Namibia, just to hear what the developments are on this matter.
On the issue of the undertaking made by South Africa to the people of Western Sahara, the Arab about what are the more about his place. That one is direct into your hands. You cannot delegate it to anyone else.
No, sorry, Chair. We I am going to provide a status report on that. You would recall that through the African Renaissance Fund, there were resources that were set aside, one to a project on removing landmines in Western Sahara. The other one was a project that had a cultural dimension, where South Africa was to build a sports complex and so on and so forth. We will provide you with the status report.
Sorry, Chair, just to get clarity on why my question, your response is very clear in terms of why the position on Western Sahara, but it doesn't clarify the Sudan position, and I don't need that to clarify here. My suggestion is that if we're taking the moral high ground in terms of Western Sahara, it doesn't appear that we took the moral high ground there. And I'm just thinking either we want to get clarity about what was different so that, or perhaps we need to acknowledge that we missed it there. Because you can't take the moral high ground when you appear to have been inconsistent. So that's just, and we would have to kind of answer some of those things. Thank you.
Zahir, you want to say something?
I think we'll give a more detailed response at later in writing. Okay, just two things I would say on that. Just also, first on the issue of Western Sahara. Western Sahara is also, it's a UN decision. The split between of Western Sahara being recognized as an independent country. I think that's the first thing we must remember. And the court decisions of 1975 on Western Sahara itself. I think that's the one thing. Together, the ambassador has said now about our history with the Polisario movement, etc. On the issue of South of Sudan and the split of Sudan, historically speaking, the current ruling government of Salva Kiir, just historically speaking, and we'll go into detail in that at a later stage, historically they always wanted a single Sudan. However, since 2005-2006, it started in Sudan itself, they started to realize it's almost impossible to get a single Sudan. Our decision as a country was taken, was driven by what the people of Sudan themselves wanted, and therefore thereafter when the SPLA decided that they would now agree to a split in the country, South Africa then moved along with them. We didn't impose our own historical position on how Sudan should have been whether it should have been split or not split. That was a decision taken by the I think that's as historical and simplistic as I can explain it.
Yeah, but that is what should have come earlier on when we're discussing South Sudan. Well, I think I will be speaking on behalf of the members that the department and people who knew their story. Each one of you did their homework on the countries you were presenting on. We were forbidden by time to engage into detailed discussion. And as a committee, we are very grateful that we have had discussions like this. We always say we as this committee are not dealing with textbook matters. Because if there is a coup d'etat somewhere, it is not written by any historian. We already must discuss, we must ask questions in Parliament, we must have a view, a South African view, a party view sometimes. So the whole environment is an ever-changing, is an ever-evolving. So from time to time we'll call you and say, please educate us, what are the developments on a particular matter. With that, thank you very much. We said we'll make two announcements. One is that the meeting of the Committee of the Chapter Session. That's the time that is pressurized on us. And the PGIR meeting, I don't know what time it is. So we need to rush to that particular meeting.
The meeting is adjourned on that note. Thank you very much.